Take your Bibles, please, and let's turn to the book of Matthew. The book of Matthew, and we're going to be in chapter number 10 this morning. We've been making good progress in the book of Matthew. The last time I preached through this, it took 5 years, and I'm way ahead of schedule, okay? Just understand that. I spent a long time in the Beatitudes and that in the Sermon on the Mount, far longer than I have this time. But I've enjoyed my study, and I trust that it'll be of blessing to you as well. We're still speaking about the commission of the 12. We have in chapter 8, starting in verse 1 through chapter 9 and verse 38, we have the deeds of the king, and there's a narrative in those two chapters about Jesus. You get into chapter 10, and you have the commission of the 12, followed by the concluding statement, "And it came to pass, when Jesus had finished these parables, he departed thence." Your major divisions in the book of Matthew all end with the phrase, "It came to pass that when Jesus had finished." So when you come to that, you need to take note, that's the end of a major section in the book of Matthew. Now, we have already seen the call of the 12 disciples in verses 1 through 4. "And when he had called unto them his 12 disciples," note the word disciples, "he gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease. Now the names of the 12," and note the next word, "apostles." Apostles, they were disciples in verse 1. Now they're apostles. The difference is the Greek word meaning to send out on a mission is the word apostello, and we get our word apostles from it. They're called apostles from here on because Jesus sent them out on this mission. Now, the names of the 12 apostles are these. The first, Simon, that's Simon Peter, who's called Peter, and Andrew his brother, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, Philip and Bartholomew. Sometimes Bartholomew is known as Nathanael. And Thomas and Matthew, sometimes known as Levi the publican, James the son of Alphaeus, and Labius, whose surname was Thaddeus. He was also known as Judas, not Iscariot, and Judas the son of or brother of James. And then there's Simon the Canaanite, who's also Simon Zelotes or Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. We've also begun considering the mission of the 12 apostles, and that actually goes farther than we will go this morning. We're looking at going in verses 5 through 20. I'll just read 5 and 6 because we've already seen those last time. "These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, Go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into any city of the Samaritans enter ye not." This was instruction for this trip only. And you can see that it was God's will for them, in spite of the need that the Gentiles and Samaritans had for salvation. It was God's will at this time that the apostles not go to either group, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, verse 6. And we move on with their message in verse number 7. "And as ye go, preach, saying, The kingdom of heaven is at hand." And as ye go continues the thought of verse 6. And the tense of preach indicates ongoing or repeated action in the sense of be preaching or be proclaiming. saying introduces the content of what they are to be preaching or proclaiming. And what they're to be saying is the kingdom of heaven is at hand, which suggests that the rule or the reign of the God of heaven has come near, has drawn near, or is approaching. Jesus is there to set up his kingdom, but the Jews would reject it, and so his kingdom was not established at this time. The message the 12 apostles were to proclaim to the Israelites is that the kingdom of heaven had come near. It was the same message John the Baptist had been proclaiming and that Jesus himself had been proclaiming. It means that the Messiah is about to set up his kingdom. As I said, the Jews rejected Jesus as their Messiah, and so the kingdom was not set up at that point in time. As we move into verse number 8, we see that along with their message goes their responsibility. Notice they were to do four different things according to this verse: heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils. Freely ye have received, freely give. Here are the details of what the 12 apostles were to do and how they were to do it. Heal, cleanse, raise, and cast out are understood in the sense of be healing, be cleansing, be raising, and be casting out. The sick are to be healed. The lepers are to be cleansed. The dead are to be raised. The devils, they're the demons, they're to be cast out. Freely suggests as a gift, without payment or gratis. Ye, meaning you 12 apostles, have received. They had paid nothing for what they received, and they were to give to others freely. It indicates that they were not to charge for their services. Their ministry of healing the sick, cleansing the lepers, raising the dead, and casting out demons was to be carried out without charging anyone anything. Now, quite frankly, I have a real problem with people in the ministry who charge for their services. Okay? It's fine that people give salaries and remuneration, but it is not fine that they set out speaking fees to churches. I know of one pastor who used to charge $5,000 for his speaking. I've heard that he actually billed $10,000. I know evangelists who will not come unless they're guaranteed certain amounts of money. I think it's despicable, and I think they ought to find this verse and do what it says. And it's fine to take a love offering, and a generous love offering should be given. But I think that they should trust the Lord just like we have to trust the Lord. Anyway, so much for that one today. That's one of my pet peeves, in case you'd never heard that before. And I don't think I've said that, and I've been here almost 5 years. So it's now you know, all right? Provide, by the way, their dependence was to be on the Lord to meet their needs, not on their service fees. Maybe some of our politicians, who are millionaires anyway, ought to volunteer their services instead of being there for the power and the money. Provide neither gold nor silver nor brass in your purses, nor scrip for your journey, neither two coats, neither shoes, nor yet staves, for the workman is worthy of his meat. According to verse 9, the 12 apostles were not to take money in their money belts. Provide neither nor and nor indicates that they were not even to begin to provide the things specified in this verse and in the following verse. Provide suggests procure for yourselves, acquire, or get. Don't even begin to get these things. Don't go out and get these things for your trip. Gold, silver, and brass suggests coined gold or money. Silver money or money made of silver, and copper coin or small change or money. Provide them not in your purses. Now you can't picture them carrying around a ladies type purse. Okay? Every once in a while I carry my wife's purse. I'm always afraid I'll hurt my back when I lift it. You know how that goes, men. And it usually doesn't match my shoes, but some of the men like to tease me and tell me about that. That's all right. I tease them. We have a good time over teasing each other. But these purses are actually belts or money belts. They're, he says, don't provide things in your belts which are intended to hold money. In your money belts. We might say it differently, in your wallet. You're not supposed to do that. It suggests do not begin to procure gold, silver, or copper to put it into your money belts. And it really means don't take money with you, nor scrip for your journey. Neither two coats, neither shoes, nor yet staves, for the workman is worthy of his meat. According to verse 10, the 12 apostles were not to provide or procure a traveler's bag, two coats, shoes, or staffs for their trip. As a workman, each one was worthy of his food. Nor scrip for your journey suggests, nor are you to take a traveler's bag or knapsack for your trip. No book bag, no backpack. No suitcase. Neither two coats suggests, nor two tunics or two shirts. These would be garments worn next to the skin, and it would suggest that one coat, tunic, or shirt each disciple already had and was wearing would be enough. Don't take an extra one is the implication. Neither shoes suggests, nor sandals. They're not the wingtip type of shoes that a pastor would wear these days. Once again, it suggests that the pair each had and was already wearing would be sufficient. Well, what if it wears out? What if the Lord keeps it from wearing out? Nor yet staves, staffs, or sticks. They were apparently travelers' staffs. Some kind of a walking stick. Although Mark 6:8 indicates that they were permitted to take a staff which they already had, here in Matthew 10:10, they are not permitted to procure another one for their trip. And 4 introduces the explanation as to why they were not to procure the various items listed in verses 9 and 10. The workman is the worker or the laborer is, and it suggests a timeless truth, something which is always true. The laborer is worthy of, is deserving of, or is entitled to his meat. Meat meaning his food or his nourishment. What it amounts to is that each disciple was to trust the Lord to meet his needs on a daily basis. They were not to pack just in case something might happen. Now, we do not know how long they were going on this trip. Okay, it wasn't necessarily a year or 6 months or 6 weeks or 6 days. We don't know. But we do know what the Lord told them to do. In addition, we see that the apostles are to dwell with those who are deserving in chapter 10, verses 11 through the first part of 13, "And into whatsoever city or town ye shall enter, inquire who in it is worthy, and there abide till ye go thence. And when ye come into an house, salute it. And if the house be worthy, let your peace come upon it." The 12 are to stay in homes with those who are worthy. "And into whatsoever city or town ye shall enter" is simply into whatever city or village or, you know, small town you enter. Inquire. We usually spell inquire with an I instead of an E at the beginning. It suggests using careful methods, try to find something out, in the sense of scrutinize or examine. And what they're trying to discern is who in it, who in the city, or who in the village they enter is worthy, suggesting who is deserving. And there abide. There's where you're supposed to stay. There's where you're supposed to dwell. There's where you're supposed to lodge. Till ye go thence, till you go out, until you leave. And when you come into an house, salute it. Salute the house? I think not. The word house may mean household or family. And it would be fine to greet a household or family. You could greet the house too. "Oh, hello, you nice white house, you nice big spacious house." But I think most of us would probably not do that, and I don't think they would either. But they would greet the family or household living there. Salute it, greet it. "And if the house be worthy, let your peace come upon it." The apostles' peace should only come upon the households or families which are worthy or which are deserving. And introduces the first of two conditions. The first condition is, if the house be worthy. And its conclusion is, let your peace come upon it. Now, a household may be worthy or it may not be worthy. Some will be worthy, others will not be worthy. Again, the house suggests here the home, the household, or the family, and be worthy suggests is deserving. Now, what will make the house or family deserving is the reception of the message that the 12 apostles are proclaiming. So if the condition is true, that is, if the house is worthy, the conclusion must follow. Let your peace come upon it. It suggests let your peace come upon this household or family, and it suggests that the apostle is to ask God to bless this household with peace by means of a benediction. Just like when believers are persecuted, they're to bless those that persecute them. It means call down God's blessing on them. That seems to me to be a difficult thing to want to do. That's my old nature speaking. Somehow I would rather God cursed them if they're persecuting me. But instead we're to call down God's blessing on them. Furthermore, we see that the apostles are to reject those who reject the message. The idea is don't waste all your time on some people who aren't interested and who are defiant and rebellious toward God. It's one thing to talk to them, but don't waste all of your time dealing with them when there are others out there. But if it be not worthy, verses 13, the second half, going through 15, let your peace return to you. And whosoever shall not receive you, nor hear your words, when ye depart out of that house or city, shake off the dust of your feet. Verily I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. But on the other hand, it's in contrast to the first conditional statement, and it introduces a second conditional statement. The condition is now, if it be not worthy, and the conclusion is, let your peace return to you. If it be not worthy suggests on the condition that the household or family is not deserving because of its rejection of the message you're proclaiming. And again, the condition may be true, or it may not be true. You'll be there, you apostles, and you'll decide whether it's true or false. It will be true with some homes, but it will be false with other homes. The conclusion of this condition is, let your peace return to you. And it means that your peace must return to you, or your peace must come back to you. And the idea is that the apostles are not obligated to ask God to bless this unworthy family with peace by means of a benediction. Don't pronounce a benediction on that home. In fact, if they've already done so, it suggests the apostles are to take their blessing back. And whosoever shall not receive you, nor hear your words when ye depart out of that house or city, shake off the dust of your feet. So when leaving a household or city where the apostles were not welcomed or where their words were rejected, rather than pronouncing a blessing on them or a benediction of peace, they were to shake off the dust of their feet. Of course, this would be a symbolic act. Whosoever shall not receive you nor hear your words, whoever won't receive you or welcome you and listen to what you have to say. It's the equivalent of saying, if someone will not receive you and will not listen to your words. Does this ever happen? Sure it does. Some people are not interested in what you have to say to them about their salvation. Now that's unfortunate for them, but it's true. You will encounter those kinds of things. That's all right. It's not the end of the world for you. It might eventually prove to be the end of the world for them. When ye depart out of the house or city, when you're going out of that house or city, shake off the dust of your feet, meaning that you apostles are to remove the dust that collected on your feet from that house or city with rapid movements. Now, I would illustrate that for you, but I'm too conservative to do such a thing, okay? Besides that, it might throw my hip out of joint, and I'm already walking around like a flamingo on one leg, so one of these days I'm going to have that hip fixed. Anyway, it's a symbolic way of stating or showing that you have no connection or association with that family or city. And then a very interesting statement is made. Verily I say unto you, in verse 15, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. Now, as bad as Sodom and Gomorrah were, and they were bad, it will be better for them at the great white throne judgment than it will be for the city in Christ's day, which rejects the message brought by the apostles. Verily means truly. And it introduces a solemn declaration in the sense of I assure you that, or I solemnly tell you that. I say unto you, is Jesus making an assertion to these 12 apostles, and his assertion takes up the rest of the verse. It shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah, suggests it will be more bearable or more endurable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah. And it indicates that for the unsaved people in the city which rejects the apostles and their message, their degree of suffering which they will experience in eternal hell will actually be greater than the suffering the people from Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities surrounding them will receive. Now, you know that anybody who gets into hell is going to have a terrible time with the suffering which will never end. But it's going to be worse for some than for others. Now, here is one of the major differences between Hades, which is a temporary hell, and Gehenna, which is an eternal hell. There are two differences biblically. One, Hades is temporary, Gehenna is eternal. They suffer in both places, but everybody in Hades suffers alike. But there are degrees of difference for the suffering in Gehenna than in Hades. Differing, some will suffer greater than others in Gehenna. All will suffer the same, as we understand it, in Hades. People who are unsaved, when they die, go to Hades, where they will suffer until the great white throne judgment, where they will be resurrected and caused to stand before the great white throne judgment, after which every one of them will be cast into Gehenna, the lake of fire, where they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Although the suffering of Sodom and Gomorrah will be terrible, the suffering for any city rejecting the message of the apostles will be even worse, because they are rejecting greater spiritual light than the spiritual light which Sodom and Gomorrah had available to them. As we go on in verse 16, we see that the apostles are to be wise, but harmless. No blowing up of abortion clinics. You understand? That's not something that God would direct us to do. Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. The apostles were being sent out into places which were dangerous, so they needed to be wise but harmless. Behold is again used, as it is in Matthew oftentimes, to gain the attention of the listeners or readers. Behold, I, that's Jesus, and I is emphatic, send you forth, I'm sending you out. It's the verb from which the word apostle comes, as I've already said. After Jesus sent them out, the 12 disciples were known as the 12 apostles. That's the difference between the two terms. Now, sheep are basically defenseless, and wolves are savage, and they enjoy devouring sheep. They think there's some lamb chops. I'm going to have them for dinner. Now, that's what they are. That's their nature. But if you're the shepherd, you're going to protect your sheep. and the sheep are basically defenseless. Therefore, introduces an inference drawn from the fact that Christ is sending the apostles out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye wise as serpents is understood in the sense of be thoughtful or be sensible or be prudent like the snakes. Snakes are perceived of as being clever, like Satan was in the Garden of Eden. There would be danger, and the apostles need to carefully avoid it if possible. There's no point putting yourself knowingly into danger. At the same time, if God allows danger to come your way, you're going to have some danger. Harmless as doves indicates something else which is to characterize the 12 apostles, and it suggests pure or innocent like the doves. You need to be harmless, not needlessly creating situations which would bring the wrath of others upon yourselves. As we go on, we see that the apostles are to expect persecution. There's a difference between expecting persecution and going out looking for it and asking for it. Don't ask for it. If it comes, it comes. But there's no point in going out and begging somebody, please persecute me. That'd be crazy. But beware of men. This isn't males here. It's beware of human beings, okay? It's not the word for adult males. You might have to beware of them too, but you might have to beware of females as well. For they will deliver you up to the councils, and they will scourge you in their synagogues, and ye shall be brought before governors and kings for my sake, for a testimony against them and the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, take no thought how or what ye shall speak, for it shall be given you in that same hour what ye shall speak. Now let me say this, this is not addressed to pastors who think it unspiritual to study. And there are some of them out there. They think that God is going to let them wing it and he'll fill their mouths while they speak and they don't have to prepare. And in case you've ever heard one of them, you would not have any trouble believing that that's what they believe and practice, okay? It takes a lot of effort to study the scriptures and to teach them well to your people, as our men who take my place every once in a while know. It takes time and effort, and it takes consistency in study over a period of time. But when they shall deliver you up, or when they deliver you up, take no thought how or what ye shall speak. For it shall be given you in that same hour what ye shall speak. For it is not ye that speak, but the Spirit of your Father which speaketh in you. Okay, you better watch out for people that are out to get you, because some people will hand these apostles over for punishment. But is in contrast, and introducing a contrast to be ye wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Jesus tells his 12 apostles, beware of men, and suggests be on your guard against men, the generic term for human beings. The tense of beware indicates ongoing action in the sense of keep on being on your guard against men. Four introduces the reason they were to beware of men. They, some men, not all men, not all people, but some will deliver you up to the councils. They'll hand you over to local courts or local councils, and they will scourge you in their synagogues. This is where the Jews disciplined offenders. They'll flog you in their synagogues. And ye shall be brought before governors and kings for my sake, for a testimony against them and the Gentiles. The punishment, the arrest, would be so that the apostles might be able to get into the presence of some of the rulers in order to testify to them. The apostles will be tried before governors and kings in order to testify to them. Ye shall be brought. It speaks of legal proceedings taken against them in their being arraigned and tried. Before governors speaks of those ruling in the provinces. And before kings speaks of those who were ruling under the authority of the Roman emperor. For my sake is simply because of me, because of Christ. It isn't because of anything you may have done. It's because you're a Christian. For a testimony against them is as a witness to them and to the Gentiles. And it suggests in order to witness to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, take no thought how or what ye shall speak, for it shall be given you in that same hour what ye shall speak. The apostles should not plan in advance what they will say when brought before governors and kings for Jesus' sake, because the words they will need to say will be given to them at the time they need them. Have you ever had a discussion with somebody and wished later on that you'd said something else? Might it be that God was protecting you by not giving you that thought at the time? You think about that. You might be better off for not having said what later on you wished you had said. Don't bet against that possibility that God protected you from yourself on that particular occasion. You know, sharp tongues are not necessarily good, all right? Sharp tongues can be cutting and get you into hot water really fast. When they deliver you up, whenever they hand you over or turn you over to the authorities, take no thought. It means do not begin to have anxiety. Do not begin to be anxious or to be unduly concerned, or it could be never have anxiety. Never be anxious or never be unduly concerned. And what they are not to be unduly concerned about is how or what ye shall speak, how or what ye should say. 4 introduces the reason the apostles should not be concerned about what they should say. It's because it will be given you in that same hour what ye shall speak. The content of it is what shall be given you, so that the sentence is understood, what you say will be given to you in that hour. What you shall say will be given to you in that same hour. What hour? The hour when you need it, when you've been turned over for punishment. For it is not ye that speak, but the Spirit of your Father which speaketh in you. Here's a further explanation of the reason the apostles should not be unduly concerned about how or what they should speak when they're turned over. Because it's not you that speak. Where you is emphatic. It's not you that speak. You're not the one speaking. Instead, it's the Spirit of your Father. It's the Holy Spirit of God who is speaking in you. And it refers to God, the Holy Spirit. And you'll see how this developed in the book of Acts, which we're not studying right now, but we've studied it previously. And how when the apostles were dragged before the Sanhedrin, God gave them the words they were supposed to say. Might it happen to us someday? Sure. Who knows? Well, Jesus came to provide salvation for all humanity. His message went first to the Jews and would eventually go to the Gentiles. He provided salvation for all humanity when he died on the cross, where he shed his blood to pay for the sins of everyone, including us. And though we haven't talked a lot about it this morning, I wonder, have you trusted him as your personal Savior? Be sure of that, won't you? If I can be of help to you along that line, I'd be most happy to sit down and go over these things with you. Let's go ahead and pray, and our musicians will come back.